Okay.
Important points in regards to Krishna's relationship with his eternal associates, particularly in Madhurya Ras. In Madhurya Ras, we've studied, and you should remember from our studies, that all of Krishna's associates in Madhurya Ras, meaning the queens of Dwarka, technically speaking, they are expansions of the gopis of Vrindavan. And in this particular pastime, chapters 82, 83, and 84, we're hearing that Krishna has met the gopis at Kurukshetra. Technically speaking, the gopis at Kurukshetra are expansions of the original gopis in Vrindavan. They are not the original gopis in Vrindavan, but they are expansions. Krishna expands himself. When Krishna leaves Vrindavan, it's not the original Krishna. We call him Vasudev Krishna when he leaves. Similarly, the expansions, his consorts, in Conjugal Ras in particular, they are all expansions of the original gopis. The gopis in Kurukshetra are expansions of the gopis in Vrindavan. And the queens in Dwarka are also expansions of the gopis in Vrindavan. And even we've heard over the last few years when we've studied, there are pastimes when the gopis in Vrindavan, they attempt to commit suicide. You remember Srimati Radharani and Vishakha, they entered into the Jamuna. You remember we discussed that last time? You remember how Lalita Devi attempted to jump off Govardhan Hill? So these pastimes are explained that the gopis themselves attempted to leave Vrindavan, even by committing suicide, but then they reappeared within the pastimes of Dwarka. So there are many technical explanations, but the point is that basically the queens of Dwarka, the gopis of Vrindavan, they are all expansions. They are connected. In one sense, you can say they are one. One and different. Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. They are, the queens are the gopis, but they're also different from the gopis. Right? The gopis are the queens, but they are different from the queens. The gopis in Kurukshetra are the gopis, but they're different from their original expansions in Vrindavan. So they're one and different. So the reason that this section of the Bhagavatam, the last three chapters, it's considered one of the most intimate and exalted sections of the entire Bhagavatam is because the gopis are displaying the highest level of Mahabhava, the highest displays of love of Godhead. And because they're displaying such a high level of love for Krishna, it's considered very intimate. Even though for us, we may not be experiencing, or we may be wondering, why is it that this is so intimate? Why is this so exalted? We cannot perceive it. It's only because we are in ignorance that we cannot perceive. We're covered by avidya. So maybe we don't perceive, but this is one of the most exalted parts of the Bhagavatam, because the gopis are experiencing extreme ecstasy in seeing Krishna once again after such a long time. And actually, Prabhupada's Guru Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, in one sense, this is the highest limit of love of God. The intense emotions of separation the gopis are feeling, and now in union with Krishna here in Kurukshetra, the feelings that they are experiencing, they are the most exalted feelings. So the Bhagavatam, one of the purposes of the Srimad Bhagavatam is to exalt the the residents of Vrindavan above all other devotees, in particular the gopis, and in particular Srimati Radharani. That is one of the prime purposes of Srimad Bhagavatam, to exalt the position of the most confidential and intimate and exalted devotees of Krishna. So here we're hearing that the gopis were amazed to hear of the queen's deep love for Krishna. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur explains, actually they weren't technically amazed because they're more exalted than the queens. But it stimulated within them their feelings towards Krishna, and therefore it's considered amazing from that level, what they were experiencing. But in terms of what the queens were experiencing, the gopis are on a much higher level of love. And there's even a pastime in Brihad Bhagavatamrita where Krishna says to Satyabhama, "You foolish girl, the only reason that I married you queens, because you remind me of the gopis of Vrindavan." Right? That was the feeling of Krishna himself. Right? So Krishna himself is feeling and understanding the gopis' exalted nature. Even in the previous chapter, maybe about 10 chapters ago, we heard how Lord Balaram revisited Vrindavan and how he was amazed by the exalted position of the Braj gopis. Even Balaram appreciates their position. Even Krishna appreciates their position, and they understand their exalted position. So this is one of the main purposes of the Bhagavatam. We should understand this clearly, to exalt the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan. If you're understanding this as you read and you study, then you're understanding the deeper import of the Bhagavatam. We should be understanding the subtle technicalities and subtleties in the rasa and the relationships between Krishna and Krishna's devotees. These things should be becoming clear to us. These things should be becoming we should be developing the desire to understand and relish these things. And if we're understanding that, because as we've explained many times before, Krishna is always thinking of Srimati Radharani, always. One who understands this point understands the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the purport of the Bhagavatam. That is the confidential understanding of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we should be understanding these things. They should be becoming awaken within us as we study now. And if they are, then we will relish the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, the Bhagavatam will remain dry to us. Any points? Okay. As the women thus talked among themselves and the men among themselves, a number of great sages arrived there, all of them eager to see Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. They included Dvaivayana, Narada, Chavana, Devala, and Asita, Vishwamitra, Shatananda, Bharadwaj, and Gautama. Lord Parashuram and his disciples, Vashishta, Galava, Bhrigu, Pulastya, and Kashyapa, Atri, Markandeya, and Brihaspati, Dwita, Trita, Ekata, and the four Kumaras, and Angira, Agastya, Jagyavalkya, and Vamadev. So it's interesting. You'll recognize as you read through this list, there are many exalted personalities who are mentioned. You would recognize many of them. This shows Krishna's supreme position, because the most exalted people, the most exalted sages who are mentioned in the Vedic literatures are now to offer their respect and obeisances and receive the darshan of Lord Krishna. Technically speaking, Krishna, and this will become apparent within this chapter, Krishna is a kshatriya. He's playing the role of a kshatriya. He's played the role of a vaishya, a cowherd boy. And he is being visited by the most exalted brahmanas in existence. This shows Krishna's supreme position. Krishna's pastimes are not mundane. Mundane scholars see that when Krishna displays conjugal pastimes with the gopis and the queens in Dwarka, they think that this is mundane. Krishna's apparent conjugal, or his conjugal pastimes, they consider these to be mundane conjugal pastimes, tinged by lust. But they're not tinged by lust, they are transcendental. And the reason that we understand they are transcendental is because those people, those persons in the past and now, who are free from material desires and sex desire themselves, they relish Krishna's pastimes, particularly Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. Lord Chaitanya, Uddhava, the great sages who we're hearing about just here, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, pure devotees, Naishtika Brahmacharis, they are all attracted by Krishna's divine pastimes, particularly with the gopis or the residents of Vrindavan, particularly the gopis in conjugal ras. This shows the exalted nature of Krishna's transcendental pastimes. They are not mundane. So here they take shelter of Krishna. And the whole Bhagavatam is to teach us this point. We must take shelter of Krishna. There are 10 subject matters in the Bhagavatam. The final subject matter is?
Ashraya.
Ashraya. The 10th canto, Prabhupada calls it Ashraya. That is the goal. The goal is to understand Krishna's pastimes, particularly his pastimes in Vrindavan. Particularly how when he's not in Vrindavan, he's still remembering Vrindavan. This is our ashraya, our shelter. This is the purpose of studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, to understand Krishna is the summum bonum, the end all be all of existence. And these sages which are mentioned here, they've realized this, that Krishna is the ultimate abode and they've all come to take darshan of him. Any points? As soon as they saw the sages approaching, the kings and other gentlemen who had been seated immediately stood up, including the Pandava brothers, and Krishna and Balaram. They all then bowed down to the sages who are honored throughout the universe. So this is called Sadacha. Sadacha means proper conduct. It means understanding how to act appropriately with different people. We're taught in the Vedas there are three types of devotees: Kanishtha Adhikari, Uttama Adhikari, Majjhima Adhikari. Prabhupada expected all of us in ISKCON to be on the platform of
Majjhima
Adhikari. Yeah. We're Majjhimas. Majjhima means middle. We're not supposed to be Kanishtha. We're not yet Uttama Bhakta, but we are Majjhima. But the Kanishtha Adhikari, and sometimes we see this within ISKCON, either people are Kanishtha Adhikaris or they have the traits of Kanishtha Adhikaris. The trait of a Kanishtha Adhikari is they don't know how to relate to others properly. They respect the deity, they respect the Diksha Guru, but they find it hard to relate to others. The qualification of the Majjhima Adhikari, he knows how to relate to others. He knows how to deal with other devotees. He knows how to deal with those who are superior, those who are inferior, those who are equal to non-devotees. He knows how to do this. And Uttamakati Adhikari also knows how to do this. But sometimes when he is absorbed in ecstasy, he doesn't discriminate so much. But a Kanishtha Adhikari doesn't know how to discriminate. So we're expected to know how to act and behave towards different levels of Vaishnavas, of devotees, and even non-devotees. As we've mentioned before, if we have friction in any of our relationships, does anyone there have friction in any of your relationships? Hands up, anyone? Anyone? Okay, three people. Very good. So if you have friction, what does this mean? It means either you or the other person or both of you don't know how to treat the other person according to their proper position. Right? That's why there's friction. That's all it is. If both people understand how to treat the other person properly according to their position, there is no friction. Friction comes when we don't understand how to deal with the other person properly. So you see here, Krishna and Balaram and the Pandavas, they all stand up, they all offer respect to the great sages, they bow down, because that's sadhaka. If you don't do that, then you're obviously not an advanced person. Any points?
There is an interesting point in the first canto, 19th chapter,
I don't know why, but I can't hear.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. In the first canto, 19th chapter, it is mentioned when Sukhdeva Goswami enters the arena. At that time, all the sages and most of the sages who are mentioned here were present there, including Lord Parshuram. And it is mentioned when he arrived in the arena, everyone stood up. And in that, Prabhupada makes a purport saying that the devotee of the Lord is respected more than the Lord himself, because Lord Parshuram also stood up when Sukhdeva Goswami entered the arena.
When Shukadev came?
Yeah.
So what's the question?
No, just a point that everyone respected Sukhdeva Goswami, and Prabhupada makes this point that the devotee of the Lord is respected more than the Lord himself.
Any other points? Questions? Okay. Lord Krishna, Lord Balaram, and the other kings and leaders properly worship the sages by offering them words of greeting, sitting places, water for washing their feet, drinking water, flower garlands, incense, and sandalwood paste. So, we've heard this many times in the Bhagavatam. When someone comes to your home, you offer them as much facility and respect as you can according to the facilities that you have. Prabhupada says, what is the minimum we have to offer?
Sweet words and water.
And a sitting place.
And sitting place.
Yeah, those three things, that's the minimum. We all have water, we all have a sitting place, and we all have sweet words. And if you can offer more, right? Wash their feet, offer flower garlands, you know, light incense within the home before they get there, offer sandalwood paste, principle of Vedic culture is to offer more respect than a person may deserve according to their position. That's Vedic culture. We offer more respect. We offer more facility, right? The more exalted someone becomes, we offer more. You know, when the most exalted person comes, you offer everything. But if you always do this, if you always offer more respect, even when someone comes, you may think, well, I'll offer them this much respect or this much facility. But if you offer them more, they'll be satisfied. Your heart will become free of envy. And you'll receive their blessings. That's the Vedic culture. In the material world, in the modern culture, we always think of everything like it's an avanic mentality, Prabhupada describes. In other words, we always think of everything in terms of a business deal. Right? That's how we treat each other in this day and age. I'll give you this much if I get this much in return. That's a business deal. Sometimes we deal like this with devotees. They come and we think, oh, I'll give them this much because I'll get this much. No, that's not the way to think. Right? The mentality of the devotees, you offer more than what even the person may deserve. But you do it because that is Vedic culture. Right? Nice example of Jarasandha just a few chapters ago. You know, I mean, Bhima was trying to kill him. But he was offering him so much. An enemy, he's offering so much. That's the mentality. That's the Vedic culture. Any points? After the sages were comfortably seated, the Supreme Lord Krishna, whose transcendental body protects religious principles, addressed them in the midst of that great assembly. Everyone listened silently with rapt attention. So these are the most exalted sages in the universe, practically speaking. I mean, you look at the list. The qualifications to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam, I mean, each one of them are the most qualified sages, the most qualified speakers, but when they come before Krishna, who technically speaking is in a lower position according to Varna and Ashram, but they listen to him with rapt attention. That is the way we should hear the Bhagavatam, with rapt attention. Prabhupada says this. That's why, you know, I give this class, you know, and Monday night, Tuesday night, we all come together and we study the Bhagavatam. No one falls asleep. In the morning, when I give class at the temple, usually people don't fall asleep. You can see the tendency is there. In some classes you go to, many people falling asleep. That's not the that's not listening with rapt attention. And actually, it's the fault of the devotees who are listening. It's your responsibility to stay awake during the class. If you don't want to stay awake, don't go to the class. Go and do something else. But if you're there, be respectful. And it's also the responsibility of the speaker of the Bhagavatam. It's your, if you're speaking, if you're giving class, it is your responsibility to keep everyone awake. If you're not keeping everyone awake, then work on your classes. Work on your presentation, work on your knowledge, work on many things, but keep people awake. And make sure that there's an interaction, that they're listening with rapt attention. And when we go to a class, we should listen with rapt attention. That's why I do these classes in the evenings, because the devotees who come, they really want to hear the Bhagavatam. I mean, all of you have come, you're busy, you've worked all day, you're tired, but still you come. That's the qualification to hear Bhagavatam. Now, they're coming before Krishna, Krishna is the Adi Guru. Even though according to Varna and Ashram, he is not on the same level as the sages, the Brahmanas, but they listen to him. Why? Because he's the Adi Guru. He's the original person. He's the wisest of all people. So when we listen to Bhagavatam, we listen to those who have the most realization. The more realization they have, the more we listen, the more enthusiastic we become to hear from them. And everyone who speaks the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you give class, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, what is it? If you give class, you are representing Lord Krishna and the entire disciplic succession. You should meditate like that every time. That's why we chant the prayers. Vandeham Sri Guru, Sri Yuta Padagamala, or Vansha Kalpati. We're meditating, that we're representing. When you speak, you're representing the disciplic succession and Krishna himself. So it's your responsibility to keep everyone awake and to benefit them. You know, my guru told me many, many years ago, you know, I've only been a devotee a couple of years, and he told me many years ago, he said, whenever you speak, prepare sufficiently so the devotees will be benefited by your class. So like today, you know, I spend an hour or two, whenever I give these classes, I spend 1 or 2 hours preparing so that everyone will be benefited. And then he said, when you become learned enough, you can just sit down and you don't even have to prepare. Like in the mornings, if I give class in the temple, like on Tuesday mornings, not tomorrow, but you know, some Tuesdays I give class in the temple, I don't prepare. I don't even know what the verse is. I just sit down, I look at the board, I read the purport, and I prepare. Why? Because I've studied for years and years and years Prabhupada's books. And I've heard from my guru and many people, and then now I have sufficient learning, I can just sit down, I can speak. But if I'm giving a course like this, then I prepare properly. So the point is prepare. Prepare so much until you become learned so you can just sit down and speak anytime. That's how learning should be. Prabhupada said we should be able to give class on a moment's notice. So the devotee says, oh, Prabhu, so-and-so did. Oh, it happens to me sometimes. Sometimes they ring me at 7:20. They say, oh, so-and-so didn't turn up, can you give class? Oh, yeah, sure, just go down and give class. Yeah. So we should study, because we're representing Krishna and the disciplic succession, so we should become learned. Any points? Okay. The Supreme Lord said, now our lives are indeed successful, for we have attained life's ultimate goal. The audience of great yoga masters, which even demigods only rarely obtain. The sages are amazed. You'll see, because you know, when a great soul speaks, everyone listens. I remember years ago I was in Mumbai, in Bombay, and I was there at the Chaupati temple, and it was Radhanath Swami's birthday, not his Vyasa Puja, but his actual physical birthday. I happened to be there. And Maharaj was there, so they invited me to come to his birthday program. So it was on the roof of devotees were living in one apartment building in Mumbai. And on the roof, they invited about 400 devotees. It wasn't like the whole congregation, it was only 400 devotees were invited. And Maharaj came with Chandramouli Maharaj. And there was a long kirtan. And then after the kirtan, Radhanath Swami prepared to speak. And everyone, you could feel like everyone was just waiting. What is Maharaj going to say? It was his birthday. You know, so, I mean, any class, right? Whenever a great soul speaks, everyone is in rapt attention. What are they going to say? So Maharaj, it was his birthday, and he began, he said, everyone is born to die. And everyone, it struck me very deeply. You know, that was Maharaj's realization. We're all born to die. So when a great soul speaks, everyone who is intelligent takes advantage. They come to hear the great soul speaking. So here Krishna himself is about to speak. All the sages assemble. Everyone wants to hear, what is Krishna going to say? Now it's very interesting. Krishna could speak on anything right now. Krishna could say anything. But what does he do? He offers respect to the audience. Because the audience is made up of
great
sages, great gurus, great acharyas, representatives of Krishna himself. And he emphasizes the need to hear from them. Who are his representatives? This is life's ultimate goal. What is the ultimate goal of life? What is your ultimate goal?
Eternally, love of Godhead.
To develop love of God. Right, that's the best answer. To develop love of God. That is the ultimate goal of our life. How do we develop love of God? By hearing from and taking shelter of great souls. Like Burujan Prabhu is coming on the weekend, so we're all excited, many of us, because we're going to be there at the retreat. Yeah, Radhanath Swami, any great soul, when they come, we're so... This is the way to attain love of Godhead. And Krishna, he could say anything, but he glorifies the audience. Right? These people are so... exalted, the masters of yoga, they can give you the ultimate goal of life. Any points? I can't hear you. You have to speak very loud or get someone to repeat.
Prabhuji says that a saintly people association is more purifying than the water of the Ganges.
Yeah.
The water of the Ganges is purifies the sins, but a saintly person's association purifies many, many worlds of sins.
Yeah, more powerful. Yeah, it says that. Okay. How is it that people who are not very austere and who recognize God only in his deity form in the temple can now see you, touch you, inquire from you, bow down to you, worship your feet, and serve you in other ways? So, not everyone understands the exalted position of great devotees. Even we don't understand. Sometimes we don't take advantage of the association of great souls, great devotees. Sometimes we have the opportunity to associate with great devotees, but we don't take advantage of it. It is considered to be sudulabha. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita. Mahatmanas, tumam parta, daivim prakriti marashe. Krishna says to get the association of a mahatma, a great soul, is sudulabha. Sudulabha means?
Rare.
It's rare. So when we get the association, it is a rare good fortune. Not everyone understands this, particularly if you're a Kanishtha Adhikari. The nature of Kanishtha Adhikari is that they are thinking, my guru is pure, but other gurus are not on the same level. Unfortunately, not so much in Melbourne, because the Melbourne devotees are quiet, balanced and mature in general, but particularly in ISKCON in India, it's actually a problem. There, a cultural problem, that in temples there are factions based upon who's initiated by which guru, and they don't always cooperate with each other. Like, factions or camps are established. This is Kanishtha mentality. I offer respect to one guru, but not to the other guru. That is the bodily concept of life. That is a Kanishtha Adhikari mentality. And if you have that kind of mentality, you cannot advance in Krishna consciousness. I've told you many times, the room that's right next to you where you're sitting, the room next door, which is now Shukadev Prabhu's office, and it's the day I got initiated. Before I got initiated, I had darshan with my guru in that room. And he said to me, don't just rely on me to take you back to Godhead. He said, form relationships with many others, because it will take many of us to take you back to Godhead. So that Kanishtha mentality means, oh, it's me and my guru. A Majjhamadhikari, he establishes relationships with many exalted Vaishnavas so that he can get the advantage of their association. So don't be a Kanishtha, don't be in the mentality, it's only one person will take me back to God. It's not the right mentality. Any points?
Take Siksha Gurus, no problem. You can take Siksha Gurus. Siksha Guru? Siksha Gurus.
Yeah, Siksha Guru, yeah.
Yeah, many Siksha Gurus.
What's the point?
There are many Siksha Gurus.
Yeah, Siksha Gurus.
Yeah. Yeah, Siksha can be many. But not too many. Prabhupada said, everybody's servant is no one's servant. Sometimes the way there's so many Shiksha gurus, then they don't listen to, you know, they just take the instruction from who they want. And if you have too many Shiksha gurus, it can also be a problem. So, you know, I probably have about 4 or 5 Shiksha gurus. You know, and that's enough, because that's enough advice. Otherwise, you have too many, then you're not really listening to anyone in particular. Mere bodies of water are not the real sacred places of pilgrimage, nor are mere images of earth and stone the true worshipable deities. These purify only after a long time. But saintly sages purify one immediately upon being seen. We can read the purport, Jamuna Leela. Can you read the purport?
Sorry, I'm not wearing glasses. I won't be able to read.
Right. Meenakshi, you want to read it though?
Because the personality of Godhead is absolute, the supreme spirit. Any representation of him, whether manifested in a stone, paint, sound, or any other authorized medium, is none different from his original form in the topmost spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan. But ordinary demigods are not absolute, being infinitesimal spirit souls, and thus representation of the demigods are not identical with them. Worship of demigods or ritual bathing in a sanctified place gives only limited benefit to those who lack transcendental faith in the Supreme Lord. On the other hand, great Vaishnava saints like Vyasadeva, Narada, and the four Kumaras are always absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and thus they are veritable moving tirthas, places of pilgrimage. Even a moment's association with them, especially by hearing the glorification of the Lord, can deliver one from all material entanglement. As King Yudhisthira said to Vidura, My Lord, devotees like your good self are very holy places personified, because you carry the personality of Godhead within your heart. You turn all places into places of pilgrimage.
Very good. So what are the points there?
The sentient persons are tirthas.
Yeah.
They have the potency to purify whatever places they go.
Yeah, it's been mentioned here that when it says mere images of earth and stone, the true worshipable deities, it's referring to deities of the demigods. We can become fully purified. Rupa Goswami says one of the five most potent ways to become purified is to worship the deity. Srimurtiya Shradaya Sevan. Worship the deity with great faith. So it's not referring to deities. It's referring to deities other than deities of Vishnu or Krishna. Deities of demigods. They're not going to liberate you. Worshipping the deity of Krishna, that will liberate you fully. In the same way, a devotee, we only worship pure devotees or Vaishnavas. We offer respect. Prabhupada said we should even offer respect to Mayavadis. Right? Even though they're Mayavadis, I know, but even if you see a Mayavadi sannyasi, Prabhupada said you should bow down, you should offer respect, because he's a transcendentalist. Should we associate with him? No. Should we hear from him? No. Should we offer respect to him? Yes. Yeah. But we only associate with Vaishnavas, right? Advanced devotees. So we worship, as Narottama Das Thakur says, Hari Hari Guru Vaishnava Bhagavata Gita. Right? We worship Hari, Krishna. We worship the Vaishnavas, the Guru, and the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita. That is the system of becoming purified. Any points?
So if Shankaracharya comes among us, we offer him respect but don't hear from him?
From her.
If Shankaracharya comes among us, we offer him respect but don't hear from him? Because he preaches Mayavad?
Yeah. Neither the demigods controlling fire, the sun, the moon, and the stars, nor those in charge of earth, water, ether, air, speech, and mind actually remove the sins of their worshippers, who continue to see in terms of dualities. But wise sages destroy one's sins when respectfully served for even a few moments. So there are two ways to associate. What are the two ways to associate with the advanced devotees?
Vani and Vapu.
Yeah, Vani and Vapu. Vapu means personal association. When you have personal association to the form of the advanced devotee, you can offer menial services. And when you serve their instructions, then you can also associate with them and serve them. These are two different ways to serve. Right, we serve through the menial service to their form and by following their instructions. Right. Now, it is mentioned here that by serving either the Vani or the Vapu, you overcome your sins and your faults. Many of us are still attracted and attached to sinful activity. Srila Prabhupada says, if you are attached to illicit sex, you should continue to study the first and second canto of the Bhagavatam and not go beyond them. So that could be highly problematic because many of us are still attached to illicit sex. We may not be having illicit sex, but we're still attached to sex life. And as long as we're attached to sex life, then technically we could argue that we should not be going beyond the first and second canto. You know, but somehow by Krishna's grace, we're going further. We're even studying Canto 10 now, which is the most exalted of all subject matters. But the point is, by hearing from the pure devotees, this is the way to overcome by service to them. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. We overcome our obstacles, our sinful attachments, and our faults. All these things become purified. Just like this weekend on the retreat, Mother Jagatrini is going to speak on the Rasa Leela. The Rasa Leela is considered to be the topmost of all of Krishna's pastimes. It is the topmost of all of Krishna's pastimes. And yet Mother Jagatrini is going to speak on that. But by hearing from a qualified person, the subject matter of the Bhagavatam, the Krishna consciousness, Krishna's intimate pastimes, it purifies the lust from the heart. The last verse in the chapter, chapter 33, of the description of the Rasa Leela, it clearly says, by hearing this pastime, your heart will become free from lust, which is the great fault that all of us are suffering from. So by hearing and serving the Vani and the Vapu, we overcome our material desires. Any points? One who identifies himself as the inner body. This verse is a famous verse. Prabhupada would quote this verse. This is a famous verse from the Bhagavatam. One who identifies himself as the inert body composed of mucus, bile, and air, who assumes his wife and family are permanently his own, who thinks an earthen image or the land of his birth is worshipable, who sees a place of pilgrimage as merely the water there, but who never identifies himself with, feels kinship with, worships or even visits those who are wise in spiritual truth, such a person is no better than a cow or an ass. So that's a famous verse. You must have all heard that verse before. And it describes in the verse, if you go to a place of pilgrimage and you don't associate with advanced devotees there, you may be going there just like a cow or an ass. In other words, you're not taking advantage of the real benefit of going to a holy place. So the basic point of the verse is that if one actually has real knowledge, what will it culminate in? It culminates in the desire to perform devotional service. We understand who are the most advanced among us by those who have the strongest attachment to serving Krishna. So we want to find those devotees. We want to find those devotees who are attached to serving Krishna, and we want to hear from them. And when you hear from them, you get the full benefit of visiting a holy place. Just like on the weekend, many devotees will come to Hare Krishna Valley, which is a holy place. But they come there to hear from advanced Vaishnavas. That is the system of how to advance in Krishna consciousness. If we go to the holy place, we're meant to see the deities. Just like it says here. One who thinks an earthen image, when it speaks of an earthen image, it's talking about demigod worship. You know, so many people go to holy places to worship demigods. That's not the point of going to a holy place. The reason to go to a holy place is to worship deities of Krishna. And when it says, if you go there just to take a bath, it's not referring, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, not referring to the Jamuna or Ganga. By taking bath in the Jamuna or Ganga, you will attain love of Godhead. They're pure devotees. Jamuna is an expansion of Vishakha. Ganga Devi is an eternal associate of the Lord. By bathing in them, you will attain pure love of God. It's not a material activity. But if you go to the holy places just to bathe, just to see the deity, but you don't hear from a saintly person, you won't get the full benefit, especially on our level of devotional service. Any points?
So, like, when we go to Rajapur and we know that Lord Shiva is there, so we can pray to him now to kind of like allow us to have the right attitude in the Dham and that.
Yeah. So we pray to Lord Shiva and any demigod in relation to Krishna, not separate. So we should pray to Lord Shiva, but only in relation to Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami said, hearing such unfathomable words from the unlimitedly wise Lord Krishna, the learned brahmanas remained silent, their minds bewildered. So, we all experience this. Sometimes you come in front of a advanced devotee, you don't know what to say. You feel embarrassed to speak. The sages, I mean, these are the greatest sages in the universe, but in front of Lord Krishna, they're silent. In front of the source of all knowledge, they are silent. We get like this sometimes too. When we're with advanced devotees, we become quiet. If you haven't got something really beneficial to say, better you just remain quiet and chant. For some time, the sages pondered the Supreme Lord's behavior, which resembled that of a subordinate living being. They concluded that he was acting this way to instruct the people in general. Thus they smiled and spoke to him, the spiritual master of the universe. The great sages said, your power of illusion has totally bewildered us, the most exalted knowers of the truth and leaders among the universal creators. How amazing is the behavior of the Supreme Lord. He covers himself with his human-like activities and pretends to be subject to superior control. So when Krishna could have said anything when the sages gathered, but what did he do? He glorified the sages. By glorifying the sages and putting himself on a lower level, that increases Krishna's greatness. It doesn't diminish. Because of false ego, sometimes we feel when we give too much respect to others, or when we put ourselves on a lower level than others, we think we've lost something. But actually, you become more exalted. You become more glorious. People are more attracted to you. People are attracted to you when they see your humility. You may have so many good qualities, but if you don't possess humility, you'll be unsuccessful and people will not be truly attracted to you. That's why Prabhupada was the greatest devotee. Why? Because is so exalted yet so humble. That's the position of a pure devotee. Indeed, the human-like pastimes of the Almighty are simply a pretense. Effortlessly, He alone sends forth from Himself this variegated creation, maintains it, and then swallows it up again, all without becoming entangled, just as the element earth takes on many names and forms in its various transformations. Nonetheless, at suitable times you assume the pure mode of goodness to protect your devotees and punish the wicked. Thus you, the soul of the Varnashram social order, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, maintain the eternal path of the Vedas by enjoying your pleasure pastimes. The Vedas are your spotless heart, and through them one can perceive by means of austerity, study, and self-control, the manifest, the unmanifest, and the pure existence, transcendental to both. So these are the qualifications to study the Shastra. What are the three qualifications? You have to be austere. If you want to study Srimad Bhagavatam, you have to become austere. You have to learn to control your mind and senses. Svajaya. Svajaya means self-study. When we study, we're studying in order to purify our hearts and our consciousness. If you're studying just to prove to others how learned you are, your study will never bear any fruit. And finally, self-control. If you don't have control of your mind and senses, you are not qualified to speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, O Supreme Brahman, you honor the members of the Brahminical community, for they are the perfect agents by which one can realize you through the evidence of the Vedas. For that very reason, you are the foremost worshipper of the Brahmins. Namo Brahmanya Devaya. Go Brahmani. Why does Krishna worship Brahmanas? Because the Brahmanas give us Krishna. That's why we worship Brahmanas. They give us Krishna, so therefore we worship. Even Krishna worships them. Why? Because they give us Krishna. So we'll stop there. Anyone have any questions? Okay. So, once again, my apologies for not being in the room, but it was beyond my control. I will be there tomorrow night. So, please come tomorrow night, and I'll see you there. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.